Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Each year, Cystic Fibrosis Ireland holds its flagship fundraising appeal titled 65 Roses Day. This year, obviously, due to the challenging circumstances arising from COVID-19, their public fundraising activity is being replaced by a virtual 65 Roses Day with an online campaign focused on 65rosesday.ie. On the line now to tell us more, we have Fergal Smith from Cystic Fibrosis Ireland. You're very welcome to the show, Fergal.
Hi, Ronan, and thanks so much for having me on this morning.
Yeah, you're very, very welcome. First of all, Fergal, can you tell us a bit more about the condition cystic fibrosis and how it impacts on the individual who has the diagnosis?
Sure, yeah. I suppose the first thing is that it's a genetic condition, so it's something you're born with, and unfortunately you have it all your life. It affects primarily your lungs and digestive system, and it means that a mucus builds up in your lungs, which leads to a lot of chest infections and damage to your lungs. But it also leads to a lot of damage to your digestive system as that goes through your body. So people end up with complications with their pancreas and other organs. So it's a multi-organ thing, even though most people associate it with issues with their lungs.
And I'd imagine that individuals with cystic fibrosis are probably in the high-risk category regarding COVID-19?
Well, absolutely, because it's a respiratory illness. People with cystic fibrosis have been cocooning now since the start of the crisis. So I suppose luckily for them, they're used to self-isolation, and they're used to trying to avoid picking up infection, because if they get an infection, it can have huge consequences for them.
I had a childhood friend, a very good childhood friend, who had cystic fibrosis, and I remember even at that stage it wasn't a new idea. Is this because cystic fibrosis is more common in Ireland than elsewhere, do you think?
It is, yeah. I mean, we have the highest prevalence in the world of cystic fibrosis, and I suppose that's linked to the fact it's the genetic condition, and it's a small gene pool here. So I think people in Ireland are very familiar now with cystic fibrosis, and a lot of people know somebody or no family impacted by it. So unfortunately, in a way, we are kind of the center for cystic fibrosis in the world.
My young friend died when he was still in his 80, well, still in his teens, but I've heard that people are surviving longer and longer. Is that right?
Yeah, sorry to hear that. It is improving. You know, the drugs have improved dramatically, so there's been a number of breakthroughs in terms of treatments that affect the underlying condition that's causing your CF. So things like Kalydeco and Orkambi, people might have heard about.
Yes,
and there's
expensive drugs, I believe.
Yes, absolutely. They're tackling the cause. Now, they're not a cure, but they tend to stabilize the damage being done to your lungs. So it means less hospital admissions. It means less time unwell, and that your lung function stops declining. So because, you know, historically, your lung function kept going down, and you end up eventually at a stage where you need a transplant if that becomes an option for you.
And, you know, I mean, obviously, because of having that experience when I was young, it's always been a thing I've been interested in and kept an eye on. But, you know, like a couple of years ago when there was a purpose-built unit, you know, for people with CF, and then almost immediately it was being used for other things, you know. It was like they'd gone to the trouble of building this thing, and then kind of there were kind of other things slipping in, and there was kind of complaints. Has that unit managed to survive?
The units are there, yeah. The same challenges, I suppose, are, you know, around staffing of units because of, you know, general challenges with staffing in our hospitals. But, you know, these were built based on fundraising by families in each area.
Absolutely.
And they're very proud of them, and they do protect them as best they can to make sure they're used for the purposes that they were built for. And these are specialized units, so you know, they control the air so that infection isn't passed from one person to the next. But a lot of our funds would go towards the building of specialised units and also the staffing of those units.
The idea being that, you know, if you have, you know, if you're reasonably well isolated and the air is good and, you know, you won't pick up hospital infections and things like that. Is that the idea?
Actually, yes, and also infections from other people with CF. So,
oh, right, okay.
People with CF can't really be together, so it's I suppose everybody's getting a small idea of what that's like at the minute, where
sure.
You know, you're doing your Zoom calls and you're on your social media and you're working from home.
You guys have been doing it for years.
That's for people with CF. That's their norm. They're used to that. Yeah.
And you know, again, I don't want to disappear down a rabbit hole here, but is it that, you know, where they have these specialized units, and as you say, which is usually not have been these, they have been fundraised by parents and families, and you know, very personally creating these particular units. Is the problem that the admissions department kind of go, I have a spare bed over there, might throw somebody in there. Is that the idea, that sometimes that kind of thing happens, or does that not happen?
Not really, no.
Good.
No, I think generally the units are used for the purposes they're built for.
Right.
Occasionally, you know, pressure may come on, and it may, you know, as an association and with the families, we've sometimes have had to say, look, you know, if there's spare capacity here, the beds can be used for other purposes, because there's no point holding on to them if they're not fully utilized.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
It's more, I think the staffing issue is more the problem, trying to find it's fine having the beds, you need to have the CF specialist team.
And those, for instance, whether it be nursing or doctor or whatever, Ed, they need a very specific kind of training. Is that the point?
That's it, you know, to do with physiotherapy and to do with nutrition and to do with the specifics of. So any person going in needs a team of people because they're looking after a multi-organ challenge.
Sure.
So the problem there is money. And what we tend to do is to fund positions for a period of time, and then hopefully they become fully funded. Units are there. Staffing can be a challenge, and it's a challenge across the hospital sector, of course.
Yeah, of course it is. So anyway, tell us about the importance of your annual appeal. How much funds do you usually look to raise?
Normally, it's our biggest day of the year, so we'd be looking to raise 200,000.
Wow.
And that's by, you know, being outside the shopping centres with our roses, and when people see us there, they know who we are, and they're very, very generous. So obviously having to cancel all the collections has been a big blow for us. And what we're trying to do is to ask people to go online and donate at 65rosesday.ie instead.
Absolutely. So I actually love the term, and we had the children's book in a while ago. Would you like to explain how cystic fibrosis becomes 65 roses?
Yeah, it's actually a lady that was fundraising, and she was fundraising for 65 roses. For cystic fibrosis,
yeah.
And she kept saying this on the phone, and she had a little child, and he was listening to her, and he said, "I know what you're doing, Mummy. You're raising for the 65 roses."
That's brilliant, isn't it?
So that's how the term came about. It's a mispronunciation of cystic fibrosis by a child trying to say that word, which is not an easy word.
Word to say, you're absolutely right. You know, so, you know, let's, please God, you get your 200 grand and people really, you know, rally and go online, and they go to 65rosesday.ie and donate. What services will this fundraiser help provide?
It'll help provide a whole range of services. So I guess at the moment we're heavily involved in trying to support the CF community through the COVID-19 crisis. And, you know, when we're asking people to donate, we fully appreciate that everybody's under pressure. So anything at all, it's great, fiver, tenner, whatever people can afford. But CF families have been cocooning now for a number of weeks. And they're under pressure. They're under pressure in terms of, you know, having to cope financially, having to cope with the lack of ability to do their exercise, trying to get to their hospital appointments financially. So we've been phoning everybody, all our members, talking to them, looking at the specific challenges and looking how we can support it, and putting out advice and information on our website and trying to support them directly financially where we can with things like counselling and with things like exercise grants. So our general support would go towards other grants, including fertility treatments and transplant support. So once we're up and running again, that'll be, you know, our day-to-day support. A lot of money goes into supporting the hospital positions. So we work with the hospitals, we look at where there's a need, and we try and step in whenever we can. We're still raising money for a new CF unit in the Beaumont, which is probably one of the last needed, but we're trying to raise €1 million there.
To get that, and that's brilliant. Can I ask you a question as well, Fergal? You know, are there many CF, sufferers who would be actually kind of living out, you know, adults out in the world, living alone, and who would otherwise be, you know, perfectly well functioning, but because of this particular situation, having to cocoon, that would have serious issues around, you know, having to do shopping and having to get those kinds of things in. Are there people like that?
There are, and you know, it's a case that they would be normally, as you say, out and about working. So they're severely impacted, and
so what happens for them?
Well, they obviously have to get family support and get people to drop food to the house, they can pick it up. So, you know, it's similar to the elderly. They're cocooned, so they have to stay where they are and work around this. So,
absolutely.
I mean, the good news, I suppose, is because they're used to this, we haven't been severely impacted yet in terms of cases in the CF community, but. Yeah. Obviously, it's such a terrible thing for everybody that
absolutely.
It's a day-to-day support service for us at the minute, trying to field all the calls.
So let's go through all the ways people can support you and donate today.
Yeah, sure. So tomorrow is 65 Roses Day. So the first thing is, if you get a chance, to go on the website 65rosesday.ie and donate anything you can, if that's possible.
There's a text number as well, isn't there?
The text number is Fight CF to 50300, and that donates €4.
Great.
So if you'd like to do the text donate, Fight to CF
to 50300.
I think people are used to that. Yeah. And then other people are doing challenges. So we've got people doing challenges with the theme of 65. So they're doing all sorts of things from 6.5-kilometer walks around their garden to 65-kilometer virtual cycles to 65 roses quizzes online. There's a whole host of things going on. If you go to our website there, you'll see all of the stuff that's going on. So if people like to do their own fundraiser around a 65 theme, that's much appreciated as well.
Yeah. I wish you the very, very best with it. And I really hope that the fact that we're all locked down here doesn't decrease the amount that people will donate. I really do hope. Fergal Smith from Cystic Fibrosis Ireland, thank you so much for talking to us today. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Spirit.
Now, the wheels of so-called normal politics are moving, if a little slowly, despite the coronavirus emergency. Talks have been taking place this week between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and they say a framework deal between the two parties should be published in the coming days, which they hope will attract a third party to come on board and form a new coalition government. Meanwhile, Bernie Sanders has withdrawn from the US presidential election race, as I was saying to you earlier during the papers, paving the way for a straight fight between Joe Biden and Donald Trump in November's election. On the line to tell us more, we have our regular political commentator, Susan Phillips. You're very welcome back to the show, Susan. How are you?
Morning, Ronan.
So, first of all, Susan, what is known about this framework document between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael?
Well, the fact is that one has been put forward, and we don't know exactly what it says, but we know it'll have some, it'll refer to the recovery, it'll refer to, I suppose, the economic changes. But the interesting thing is that these are extraordinary political times, Ronan, because the fact that Fine Gael didn't do well in the February election would normally, you know, have led us to sort of hearing pretty little more about them.
That'll be the end of them, yes.
You know, prop up something. But the coronavirus changed everything. And what was initially called a caretaker government, whilst the new Taoiseach was kind of being elected, it's actually, Ronan, become a de facto one that in most people's minds, it's pretty popular, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's this perception, certainly, that they've handled themselves perhaps better than they did during the previous 3 years, you know?
Well, the previous nine, no, definitely. Yes. But suddenly it's extraordinary confidence in the caretaker Taoiseach, as he's called, and the caretaker minister, Simon Harris. It's absolutely soared. You know, I've heard from people who would have been very cynical in the past, and they're actually saying, leave them there, let them stay there.
Let them at it. It's quite interesting, too. I'd just like to remind you, Susan, that the very first thing you said to me on the morning after the election was Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael. And then it drifted and drifted and drifted, and then we spoke about 3 weeks later. I was like, no, there's no way that's going to happen. And then suddenly coronavirus happens and it's all Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael again.
It really is. And another thing I said was that I thought we should keep an eye on the Labour Party. But to go back to the document, I mean, this document is going to be about recovery, it's going to be about policies. I mean, how do you put forward a document when you don't know how it will be? But anyway, there is one. And it goes before the Social Democrats, the Green Party, the Labour Party. It does not go before Sinn Féin, much to Sinn Féin's annoyance. However, I think they're being a little bit, I don't know, maybe they're just dying to get back into opposition. Imagine being in opposition during a time of austerity. It'd be a dream, wouldn't it?
Perfect. And you know, I suppose there is that feeling of maybe speaking out of both sides of their mouth a little bit, because on one hand, they were talking really a good game in terms of going into government. Then they suddenly went very, very quiet, you know, when the corona thing happened. And now they kind of seem to be getting back into gear again. Do you have any sense, I know we weren't going to be talking about Sinn Féin at all, but do you have any sense of what's going on with them? Are you thinking, they've now decided opposition is for them?
I think that they, secretly, I think they want to go into opposition. I mean, they're not going to go into government. We can see that.
Sure.
So they have to go into opposition. And it's interesting because this document you were talking about, it goes before all the other parties. Now, people are saying, what on earth is the Green Party doing? Why don't they just say yes? Why are they saying they want a national unity? You know, what are they up to? Labour Party have got a new leader, Alan Kelly, and he's umming and ahhing a bit. I've always said I thought Labour would go in. Social Democrats haven't made their minds up. And then, of course, they're going to need some independence because the magic number has to be over 80, doesn't it?
Over 80. And I've heard that really they really need 85 or 86 to allow for a few people to, you know, to leave, to whatever. Retire. Can I just ask you as well, you know, do you think the Green Party wanting the national government, and you know, I think a national government could be quite popular, but I just mean in terms of the politics of it, do you think that the reason the Green Party are talking about a national government is because they're looking for cover in case they end up in a situation like they did last time where there was austerity and they ended up getting blamed for it?
Well, I think that they are going to be highly criticised because this is a once-off. They've got, you know, 10 seats or something like that coming from nothing. They could say, look, we'll come in and support you. We don't like everything you do, but these are our environmental policies. I just don't get it, to be honest.
Yeah.
But you see, there's a big snag because everybody's saying, let's just leave situation as it is and then in, say, 4 months' time, we'll go back to saying who will form a government because we're all thinking of corona and we're actually not thinking about who the next Taoiseach is. People are saying we're quite happy with the present leadership. However, Ronan, there's a huge snag because no legislation can be passed at the present because the Senate has been reformed and until it's literally reconvened, no caretaker government can pass any legislation and it can't be reconvened until the Taoiseach nominates the additional 11. And he can't because he's only a caretaker Taoiseach.
Yeah, because we don't have a Taoiseach at least. Yeah.
Actually, you could argue a government is needed. So we've had the Senate elections and then the 11 that get appointed by the Taoiseach, you know, that's up to who the next Taoiseach is.
Were you surprised at all by any of the results of the Shannon elections?
Well, not really. I mean, if you look at the, as I say, they've only got 49 in. They've got the next 11 appointed by whoever the Taoiseach is. But, yeah, I suppose it wasn't really surprising. Fianna Fáil did well with 16. Fine Gael, who had 21, they went down to 12. Sinn Féin took 5, but only just. It was probably what we thought. And then you're always going to get some former TDs who lost their seats and thought, well, we'll get back into the Senate, and they didn't. People like Timmy Dooley never made it back. And then you had other people who were MEPs who hadn't made it in the last Europeans, like Lynn Boylan, who did make it in.
Yeah.
So No, nothing particularly surprising. And now, of course, they're looking to see who can get this very well-paid job of Cahill. It's like $114,000 a year, and
nice.
That will probably go to a Fianna Fáil guy.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're thinking there is... It's looking like, from what you're saying, that it's a distinct possibility that Micheál Martin will be the Taoiseach, and will that then give the Seanad a really very Fianna Fáil look?
Oh yeah, definitely. But then don't forget that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are doing this sort of joint let's chat together and see what
sure.
we can do. So I'd say there'd have to be a bit of mix, give
yeah.
and take. And then all this fuss about whether you're male or female, as you know, I've said it on air, I've said it publicly always, I'm totally gender blind. I think people should be in jobs because of their competence, not because of whether they're a man or a woman. But apparently the present Taoiseach has said that he was very disappointed that there were so few women elected, and therefore if he had to appoint some, he'd probably be sure to see yeah. that they were ladies. So, you know, that's just another aside, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I take your point, actually. There's something, you know, the point was there were actually quite a number of women who were up for election, and there were quite a number who were already in place. And when it goes to the electorate and the electorate votes, and the electorate effectively sacks those people, you know, because there are quite a few of them gone, you know, people that you would think, I mean, people who did perfectly good jobs, but they were sacked by. It's hard to say, you know, on a kind of, you know, this is about democracy after all. You got it wrong to a democratic. Or can you do that? Can you say
well, no, you can't, because if people put their names up and they're not elected,
yeah,
you can't say, well, you've got to go back. And I agree that there is definitely, I suppose, a place for saying a certain number of both male and female have to be on the ticket, and
sure,
they were.
Yeah.
But when you get in the ballot box, you can't make someone do something.
No,
can
you can't force them to vote. That's my point. Like, if you make sure that there's an even spread of people available, that's, you kind of have to leave it there, don't you? Because then people have to vote.
Yes, and if you know, lots of people don't even want to put their names forward, you know, they don't have to, but if you put your name forward, then the electorate have to decide.
I have to decide on you, you know. Okay, so I'm with you then, Susan.
So
we want to talk actually a little bit about Bernie Sanders. I suppose it wasn't a massive surprise that he pulled out of the Democratic contest, but I was surprised he did it so early. Like, I thought he might have given it another go.
It's very weird, because I saw his press release, and I then saw President Trump's press release, well, actually interview afterwards. But so Bernie Sanders said that this extraordinary, but he said he's suspending his campaign for the Democratic nomination for U.S. president. Now, I agree on the surface, it's not surprising, because Joe Biden had suddenly overtaken him. You probably remember Joe
yes.
Biden does very well with African Americans and older people, and you know, he's very centralist, and I suppose you could say that Bernie Sanders had come over as, you know, being very socialist but very popular with the young, but
yes.
suddenly he was sort of overtaken, and it could have been that kind of middle Democratic America said to themselves, look, we're going to have Joe Biden if we're going to beat Donald Trump in
yeah.
the autumn, and that's possibly what happened. But anyway, it's very odd, because he's saying that yes, he's suspended his campaign, but he's going to keep his delegates, so that when they have the conference, the Democratic conference in August, he will have the delegates that have supported him, plus any new ones, he's keeping his name on the ticket, to be there. And when asked why, he said, well, because I want to be able to influence policies. But then
wow.
on comes Donald Trump, and I suppose quite rightly says, well, why does Bernie Sanders use the word suspend? And of course, Donald Trump didn't say this, but
somebody said it to him. Yeah,
he's sort of, is Bernie sort of thinking, well, say Joe Biden, who's, you know, 78, and he's called by the president, he's called Sleepy Joe. You know, maybe he has a very sleepy moment, and suddenly he pulls out, and then is it, say, available for Bernie to come back in? I just don't know, but it
wow.
is a little bit unusual.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I completely missed that word.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, okay, he's gone. I didn't hear suspend, and suspend is interesting, because, as you say, I mean, do you think he might be looking for a vice presidential slot?
Well, to be fair, he did say some very nice words about Joe Biden, and he said he wished him well. And Joe Biden came back and wished Bernie Sanders well.
Yeah.
But it is slightly unusual. I mean, why would you not just say, please, everybody that will vote for me in any forthcoming primaries, don't, because I've gone, and make sure Joe Biden gets it. And it may be because Joe Biden's pretty well dead cert now. And as you say, maybe, yes, maybe you're right. Maybe there's sort of a vice president carrot in the distance. Yes, you could be right.
I saw a quote from Trump there. Bernie Sanders is out. Thank you to Elizabeth Warren. If not for her, Bernie would have won almost every state on Super Tuesday.
I know.
He's stirring it up, isn't he?
Yes, in fact, he did win the biggest Super Tuesday prize, which was California. Bernie won.
Yeah.
But he lost 10 of the other ones to Biden that night. And that was, including Texas, where he put a lot of time in. And that was sort of, you know, the start of, I suppose, poor old Bernie Sanders saying, look, I'm going. But interesting enough, he didn't say, it's because I had a recent heart attack. You know, he's a really strong goer, isn't he?
Oh, yes. Yeah. You have to go, you know, credit to the man. Because none of these guys are spring chickens. I mean, we've had 20 years of much younger presidents and stuff. All these guys are a good age.
It's really extraordinary. I mean, if you're not now in your late 70s, you're really not going to be considered for anything, are you?
Yeah, that's right. It's funny. Maybe it's just the days we live in. It's really fascinating talking to you. Thank you so much. And we'll talk to you again soon, Susan. God bless you. Bye-bye. Spirit. Well, it's been great to see sunny weather during lockdown and brighter evenings, but even if we're only out for a short amount of time, walking locally or in our gardens and with the Easter Bank holiday this weekend during lockdown, our next guest is going to give us gardening advice and tips to those with gardens and those in apartments with balconies. On the line to tell us more, we have Anne-Marie Bowring from Dalkey Garden School. You're very welcome back to the show, Anne-Marie. How are you?
Hi, Ronan. I'm very well, thank you, considering everything that's happening with everybody at the moment.
Absolutely. First of all, Anne-Marie, I imagine during lockdown you've been spending more time than ever in your garden. Is that fair?
Well, absolutely true. I am very privileged, and it makes me really, I've always appreciated what I've had, but I really appreciate it now. And unfortunately, what's great now for me is that I have the time to really get down on my hands and knees and do a bit of weeding, which I usually skim over quite quickly most of the time. But I'm still involved with my students in Blackrock Further Education Institute. They're on their final projects. Obviously, workshops and other classes that I run from here are not happening. But I'm delighted to have this opportunity to share some of my knowledge with you because it brings home to me also how important it is that people have a small garden or somewhere that they can go to stretch their legs, to get some vitamin D. And that's what people are talking about now, of course, is getting some sun. Do you know that mushrooms are full of vitamin D?
I didn't, yeah. But I do now. Yeah. That's really good.
Yeah, because they're a fungi, obviously, and mushrooms contain a provitamin called ergosteroil. And once mushrooms are exposed to UV light source, this causes a chemical reaction that results in the mushrooms producing vitamin D. So, you know,
why Irish people go mad for the taste of mushrooms is because somewhere inside themselves, their body is saying, get more of this into you because you're all deficient. Yes.
It's not just adding bulk to your food. And of course, mushrooms are part of our fungi, which are really, really important for our soil.
And a good mushroom is as tasty as a steak. It's really very nice. So listen, one of the things, it's quite extraordinary, one of the things I've encountered, like amongst my own clients and patients and various things, is that actually telling people to go out and get into the garden and get their hands into the soil, because there are kind of health and mental health benefits of gardening, aren't there?
Oh, hugely. Well, I mean, just being out in the air, the space and everything like that, it's actually vital because we are creatures of the ground, of the soil. You know, we get where we came from. We talk about being earthed and all these terms, but they have a real meaning. But anyway, just for people who are wanting to do something now and they're finding it, they can't move more than 2 kilometers and they're very restricted and garden centers are closed everywhere. But there are lots of garden centers and nurseries that are open, they're online. And a lot of them have been overwhelmed recently because with incredible interest, which is fantastic. But have a look around you and see what garden centres are in your area. And maybe they can do, maybe you can pick up things from them or whatever. And also our supermarkets are a great source of plants now as well. And this is an amazing time to start planting because people have been talking about the amazing moon that we're having. Of course, this is the Easter moon. You know, we always have a big moon.
Oh, the pink moon. Yeah, mass.
Pink moon.
Yeah, yeah.
And there is a thing called biodynamic gardening where people garden according to the moon. And it's about, you know, the moon we're very familiar about with tides, that it has a huge effect on tides. So obviously, if it's bringing water in and out, it's doing the same thing with our groundwater. So obviously, the water's been sucked higher because of the large moon at the moment. So therefore, it's a great time to plant in the garden. plant, whatever.
What will you specifically be focusing on in the garden during Easter? And I suppose we could say the whole month of April.
Okay, well, for a start, I had a question from somebody this morning, and she asked me about wild garlic, which is absolutely amazing.
I love it, yeah.
Thing. Lovely thing to have growing wild in a woodland or somewhere like that, but not in your garden, unfortunately, because it's really, really uncontrollable. And it is nice. It has a beautiful flower, and you can use the leaves. And, before garlic was really grown in Ireland, that's what people used in their cooking.
Yeah.
But it's a very invasive plant. So it becomes a real problem if you let it go wild. And this particular garden that my friend was asking me about, I know the garden, and she has a lot of wild garlic there. So how do you get rid of it? It's with great difficulty because they're little bulbs. So, we're always talking about, daffodils, et cetera. If you want to feed the bulbs, you do not cut back the green leaves. So that's something that you must remember now, not to cut back your daffodil leaves and the tulips coming out, the same thing. So obviously you don't want garlic bulbs to be fed. So number one, get rid of the green leaves. That'll certainly cut back. Don't allow them to flower. Because then they'll self seed. So sometimes even if you start digging up the bulbs can be quite deep. Because bulbs have a habit they have a mechanism where they actually can bury themselves quite deep into the soil. I always remember coming across daffodils in my own garden, and I decided I wanted to smooth them, and I said, my God, whoever planted these really planted them deep. And then, of course, I realized afterwards they have a mechanism which allows them to bury themselves really deep in the soil as they get older and older over the years.
Right.
So with wild garlic, again, coming back to that problem, they like to grow in acidic soils that are low in organic matter. So you could apply lime, that could help.
Yeah.
But basically, and compost, lots more compost, and that will really encourage, it will discourage the acidity in the soil. It'll change the pH a little bit.
Yeah.
Very hard to change pH soil. But anyway, going back to what we should be planting now, there are lots of, this is really planting time, March, April. We're now in April, aren't we?
Yeah.
So for, sunflowers, again, what else can you do? Obviously, vegetables, broccoli, and actually purple sprouting broccoli, or these sprouting broccolis, are fantastic plants to grow because brassicas such as cabbage, etc., can be very big and cumbersome. The other thing, of course, is lettuce. If you buy for herbs as well, of course, if you're a small garden and a balcony garden, definitely plant herbs. And you can better to buy them in pots. Again, believe it or not, your supermarkets can be a great source of this at the moment. But go online and have a look and get some ideas there. I'm just trying to think now what else I have to say to you.
I was going
to
say, like, one of the notes here is that this is nesting season. Does that impact on gardening?
Well, it would, because, for example, you wouldn't want to be cutting, pruning your trees. You've got a lot of ivy and stuff like that in your walls. But don't cut it back now because you'll have little nests in it. So just looking at my notes here, of course, large clumps of perennials such as hostas. Now, hostas are a beautiful plant. They're just emerging out of the soil now. Slugs love them. So if you hoe a lot around areas where plants are growing that are eaten by slugs, hoeing is a great thing because it disturbs the slug eggs in the soil, and they don't manage to develop. Therefore, your hostas are protected from slugs.
Yeah. Wow.
In your greenhouse as well, if you've got seedlings growing, be on slug alert and vine weevil alert. Have a look underneath your pots and get rid of them. Because, for example, you would have hopefully maybe planted up some of your geraniums. You've got,
give us a clue.
Well, they're late flowering, and there's lots of different types of phase.
It'll come to you now.
Of course.
Yeah. Let's move on to something, and when we move on to it, it'll come back to you. Lettuce, carrots, things like that. Are we too late for that?
No, it's not. Absolutely not. You can keep growing. You can keep planting all of these seeds all the time now. The other thing too is that when you get your seed packet, have a look. Look at the back. There's an awful lot of information on the back of your seed packet about when to sow, how much space that the plants will need, what height will they are. For example, there's a beautiful annual plant called Cosmos, and you can get it, and it's you buy them, and you can buy them as plants, but you can sow them as seeds, and they actually grow very well as seed. But you can get dwarf Cosmos and you can get very tall Cosmos. So make sure, if you want tall Cosmos, have a look at CPAC and make sure you're buying the correct one, because you could end up with the shorter one and you kind of wonder, why isn't mine like hers, etc., or his? Dahlias is what I'm thinking of.
Dahlias, there Dahlia you tubers. Go. I was trying to think of the same thing myself.
Yeah,
Dahlia Smith, she's great, isn't she? Anyway, sorry, go on. Yeah. What and advice, what can I just, we'll have to move it on because we're a little bit up against the clock.
Sure.
What advice do you have for those in apartments who have balconies?
Right, in apartments and balconies, if you've got potted plants already and you want to give them a new bit of vigor, and this is the time of year too also that we renew our pots. You don't necessarily have to throw out all the soil that's in the pot, but just take off the first layer and renew that. Now, where can you get compost at the moment, again, which can be a problem, is, again, supermarkets, or you can buy it online. Again, see, you can grow carrots very successfully in pots.
Can I just ask you, do they not say that places like Woody's and some garden centres are still open, or are they definitely all closed now?
As far as I know, I think they're closed. Garden centres are, as far as I know, they're closed.
Okay. For some reason or other, I thought they remained open because something, I don't know, but anyway.
They were open up to recently, but they have closed now.
During the last Friday week. Yeah, I get you. Okay.
Yeah. So, and the other thing too, just if you want, look for ideas for making your homemade seed. Bell peppers, you know, the red, orange, and the seeds from those, you can actually grow peppers from those. So do that now, because it takes quite a long growing period.
The seeds inside. Yes. So would you do it like in a seeding tray and put a little bit of, and get them to go indoors?
Absolutely. Just clean out the seeds and put them into a seed tray. And a seed tray can be anything, but don't have it too deep, because you want the bottom, you want the soil to heat up a little bit.
Yeah.
Keep the peppers are not plants that we grow out of doors in Ireland, so they need an indoor situation. Yeah. So a warm balcony, matters, of course.
With a bit of shade, shelter.
Try and take some of the seeds from your ripe plant.
I'd give that a go.
To get seeds from a plant, the plant must be ready to give it seeds. In other words, it must be ripe. If it's not ripe, the seeds aren't ready to germinate and do what they're supposed to do.
Do you know what? I've got to just say to you, and we're going to have to leave it there, Anne Marie. But just to say, really, really recommend. It was literally grow it yourself. Guys came in when we were back in Hume House nine years ago, and just said, and I absolutely couldn't. I killed everything that was in my house in terms of. But once I started growing some vegetables, I started growing from seed. It's a wonderful, wonderful experience, folks. Please give it a go, particularly during the lockdown. And there's Anne Marie talking about growing stuff in a balcony, in a pot. You can do it. I appreciate that. Thank you, Anne Marie Baring, founder of Dalkey Garden School. Thank you so much
for
talking to us.
Happy Easter,
everybody. Happy Easter, and I hope you have a lovely time despite the lockdown. God bless you.
Okay.
And let me tell you all, folks, that www.dalkeygardenschool.com is the place to go if you want to find out any more details on that.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.